Joe Talbot on BBC Sussex.
Right, we're going to do half an hour or so on gadgets with our gadget detective, and joining us is Fevzi Said, gadget detective, to do just that. How are you, sir?
Afternoon, Joe. I'm good, thank you.
Good, good, good. So we've got a couple of topics you've picked out, but of course we'll help people with anything they'll try and throw at us.
Yeah, yeah. If you've got a problem with an existing gadget, or you've got some money burning a hole in your pocket, hopefully not a Galaxy Note 7 burning a hole in your pocket, if you've got some money, I may advise you on how best to spend that as
okay.
well.
Okay, all right, very good.
And not on me.
Not on you, no. Or me, as much as I'd like you to.
Well, you may be, but certainly not on me.
Speaking of gadgets then, could this be classed as a gadget? Mike in Guildford says, interesting that the i360, the CEO you interviewed on this radio station last week after it got stuck, refused to say what the technical fault was and went on to gloss up an event they'd staged. Here we are again with the i360 on Bryant Seafront, not even taking passengers. How much did this cost again? Well, it's not technically a gadget, Mike, but I thought I'd mention it to Fevzi.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate, but I mean, it's a one-off design, isn't it? And
yeah.
There's not much...
That's it.
They can't beta test it other than send people up in it,
I guess.
But, that's,
how often do you hear when people say, don't buy the Mark 1, buy the Mark 2, because all the problems have been ironed out when it comes to cars.
The next i360 will be slimmer. It'll be the slimmest i360 we've ever made, and it will have longer battery life.
And you'll be able to see much further in it.
Yes.
Something else that was mentioned, though, by a colleague, is the new iPhone and this debate over whether or not it will or will not have a headphone socket or jack or whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
And this was asked by my colleague Danny, who's heavily into iPhones.
Wow.
And I said, well, does it matter? I mean, to me it would matter, because I use my phone to make calls, get texts, go online if I need to check emails, but lots of the time I listen to music. If I'm traveling by train, I listen to music on it. Not in my car because it's too old, but in my wife's car you can plug the music from the phone through the auxiliary jack.
Yeah.
And all those sorts of things. So without that, I'd be absolutely lost. And Danny said, well, you're a dinosaur. You don't need a headphone socket anymore.
Unless you want to listen to music and charge your phone at the same time, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Slight problem there.
I mean, he says it'll be streamed in the future, though. We'll be in a wireless environment.
Well, that's true. But first of all, wires are often better than wireless in terms of quality. Bluetooth, which is the way we traditionally connect wireless headphones and other audio devices, is a bit... quite frankly, it's a little bit ropey. You have to pair it, and then sometimes it drops the connection. And also, don't forget, at the moment, headphones don't need charging.
Mm.
Now you've got to charge your headphones. Now, admittedly, it's $159, this pair of wireless headphones that they don't is not quite on sale yet. And guess what that costs in the UK?
$159, £300?
No, £159. So they've basically hit dollar pound parity on this, which is seems like it's not quite right. I mean, I know the pound dropped about 10 or 12% post Brexit vote, but that's about that's a good deal more expensive than it should be. So, in short, yes, they've done away with the headphone jack on the iPhone 7 and the iPhone 7 Plus. They do provide headphones in the box, and they plug into the proprietary Lightning port, which is also at the bottom of the phone. In addition to that, they've given you a dongle, an adapter that allows you to plug conventional headphones in through the Lightning connector. So it's 3.5mm jack at one end and Lightning connector at the other. The problem with those is, how long before you lose it?
Mm.
And also how long before the cable frays and breaks, because they have a tendency to do that, some of the Lightning connectors. So they are a bit, they're not as robust as they could be, let's say. So I'm sure we would go to something better in the future, but I really don't think that Apple made a strong case for it. And I think a lot of people had a good laugh when one of the Apple execs stood up and said they did it because it was a courageous thing to do.
Yes.
I don't think so. Because, you see, and then there was a suggestion, well, they needed to do it in order to provide the water resistance and dust proofing that the iPhone 7 now has, except that other phone manufacturers seem to have managed to do that and retain the headphone jack.
Yeah. The waterproofing, I'm not quite... Showerproof, I suppose, if it gets caught in the rain, but waterproofing, I go swimming with it?
I think they use the term water resistance.
Yeah.
And so it's what's called IP67. So the 6 refers to how dustproof it is, and the 7 refers to how waterproof it is, which means 7 means you can put it in underwater for a short time. You wouldn't be advised to do it, but if it did happen, the phone would probably survive. Interestingly enough, and actually not unique to Apple, even though the phone is now certified as being water resistant, your warranty does not cover you for any water damage. So don't go doing it as an experiment thinking, oh, you know, I can get a new iPhone out of this or something. Yeah, you won't. They won't cover it under the warranty.
They won't go for that. Okay. No. Well, I had an old brick phone that I managed to drop down a toilet once. One of my children was very small and I was helping them in there. And then I just took the battery out and the SIM card out and laid it all out in the airing cupboard.
Yep.
And it dried and it worked fine.
Yes, yes. Well, the joke was that, you know, Uncle Ben's rice shares would plummet at this point because, of course, the trick when you get your device wet like that is to put it in a jar full of rice, and the rice acts as a desiccant and sucks the water out of the device. It's not great to have rice dust in your device, but I suppose it's better than water.
Yes, I suppose so.
Depends
where you drop the phone as well, otherwise you won't be eating that rice.
No.
All right, let's stay with phones then. We've got a JVC video cassette recorder. No, I think it's a cam recorder question as well I'm going to put to you. But 03459570057 if you've got a question for Fevzi, or text radio to 81333. Emails, as Jill did about her old JVC, to joe.talbot@bbc.co.uk. But we're talking about phones, and you mentioned the Galaxy Note a little bit earlier on, and the number 7, so it's all fallen together quite nicely.
Yes, it's almost as if it was planned. So the Samsung released last month the Galaxy Note 7, which is their phablet, half phone, half tablet. Amazing device. Some would say technologically superior to the iPhone 7, except for one thing. It has a propensity to burst into flames either during or after charging. Samsung acted swiftly on this and recalled the products when there were 35 reports of incidents out of 2.5 million that had been sold. But 35 is still a significant number, even you know, against 2.5 million. Yeah. So Samsung did it very well. You know, they acted a lot more quickly than a lot of companies have under similar circumstances. And again, battery problems with lithium ion batteries that go in mobile phones and tablets do have this weakness that if there is a manufacturing fault, it often can lead to devices that can burst into flames, and that's what's happened here. But they've gone a step further, and the reason why I wanted to mention it today is Samsung have now gone a step further and not just said, we can replace it for you, but they're urging owners of the Galaxy Note 7 phones to stop using it straight away and take the device straight back to where you bought it, so don't hang around. A number of airlines have already banned their use and charging on board as well, and been advised not to put it in the luggage either, because if they burst into flames, you can only imagine what could happen if it yeah. caught fire on an aircraft.
Which leads to the question, when is a good time and where is a safe place to charge your phone? Because based on what you've just said, yes, no, you wouldn't want it bursting into flames on a plane in the luggage hold, or indeed anywhere else on board a flight. But I don't think I'd want it bursting into flames in my radio studio or next to the bed or in the kitchen overnight. It is quite difficult, isn't it?
So in the normal run of things, lithium-ion batteries in phones and tablets are safe and can be charged, you know, anywhere that's sort of dry, and you would think of charging your phone, obviously not in the bath or anything like that. The difficulty is, because of the way that this particular technology works, if there is a stray wire or a strand that causes a short circuit, it because of the way it works, and you know, the migration of ions and all of this, what happens is the battery overheats, it starts expanding. That's why you get explosion, by the way, is when the battery expands in a space where there's no room for it to expand.
Okay.
In the old days, all phones had removable batteries, and the worst thing is the back would have popped off it, but now they're encapsulated, as they are with the Samsung Galaxy Note 7.
Yeah.
And by the way, if that wasn't the case, they could have just swapped the batteries for people and not had to swap out the whole phone. But because it's a non-removable battery, they're having to do that. So they overheat, they cause fires. So they are safe unless there is a manufacturing fault, and from time to time that happens. The other thing just to be aware of is that even a phone that is safely manufactured with a safe battery in it can become dangerous under certain circumstances. For example, if you were to drop the phone, and there was a cyclist, I think he had an iPhone, but it could happen to any device.
Yeah.
He fell off his bike, the phone struck the ground, and it burst into flames, and he had very severe burns on his thigh where the phone had been strapped.
Oh,
so that, you know, there are those sorts of things. And the other thing is, it never ceases to amaze me that people will spend the better part of £1,000 sometimes on a phone or a tablet, and then they'll buy a second charger for £3 off a well-known auction site. And the thing is, don't do that. You know, buy either the branded charger, and I know that costs more, but if you don't want to do that, then buy from a really reputable retailer who you know is not going to sell you some cheap tat. Because unfortunately, some of the stuff that's coming in, and if it's £3, you know this is not right. You know, it's too cheap. They even sometimes fake the safety kite marks and so forth on it. So just it's one
it's
of those
worse
cases.
The £15, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, because this thing is beside your bed when you're sleeping. You know, you put yourself and potentially your family at risk by just buying a cheapo charger.
But that is so right, human nature, isn't it funny? But we shouldn't be amazed, because people do things like, you know, fill the garage full of rubbish, and your second most valuable asset after your house, which is your car, you leave outside.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the garage is full of things you don't need. Anyway, we'll come back, we'll take a quick break for George Harrison. We'll come back if you've got a question for Fevzi, the gadget detective, then it's 03-459-57-0057. This is George Harrison, Got My Mind Set on You. Fevzi, the gadget detective, is with us and remains with us, we hope. Yes, there he is. And we've got a couple of texts that have come through here. And this one's from Stephen Bryan, Fevzi. And it says, Hi, Joe, I've just purchased a smart TV which allows me to connect to the internet. Can I get security? It's a good question. Can I get, or more to the point, do I need to get security for it? As it obviously has aspects of a computer. I currently use McAfee for my laptop and desktop. Would I use that on the TV, Stephen Bryden?
Right. So most smart TVs are not capable of running security software because they are proprietary platforms. In other words, the software that they run, the operating system, is not standard and it's not something that you can buy software for to do that. The exception to that is some smart TVs have got Android built into them, which is the same operating system as you get in about 80% of the smartphones that are sold worldwide. Those ones, in theory, you could. Most people wouldn't bother, but it's a very interesting point, because with these devices, they're known as Internet of Things. So these are things that are not computers in the way that we'd normally think of them, but they are now internet connected. And the thing is, they often sit on the same network as our laptop and tablet and things where we have, you know, banking and shopping and credit card information and all the rest of it. So the answer is, most people wouldn't bother. You can only bother if you want to be, you know, very belt and braces about it, if you have an Android device and if it allows you to download third-party applications. Okay. But for most people, I don't think it's an issue.
Very good. All right, here's one from Jill. This was an email in anticipation of your appearance on the radio show. Oh. She says, I love listening to Fevzi on BBC Surrey and BBC Sussex. Doesn't mention me. He makes gadgets.
Thanks, Mum.
Yeah, cheers for that. He makes gadget issues understandable to even a technical numpty, says Jill, like me. So I hope he can help. We have an old JVC digital video camera, probably the huge thing that weighs a ton, I would imagine, which we've just found at the back of a cupboard.
Yep.
There is a small cassette tape in it, which has some lovely film of our children. We can view this on the LCD monitor on the camera. Our iMac doesn't recognise the JVC format, so we're struggling to transfer the contents of the tapes to a DVD or other device for long-term storage and access. We do have an old video player, so we could transfer the film somehow, perhaps using that. I'm using the royal we, but in reality, I know nothing about the gadget, so it's my dear husband, who's currently somewhere in India on business, and he's left me to pose the question to Fevzi, and I'm deliberately emailing you so you can't ask me any trick questions.
All right, Joe. So you can get it across onto the computer. You may need to buy an extra gadget to enable you to convert. Now, you mentioned it's a digital camcorder, and there were digital camcorders that recorded onto tape.
Yeah.
But a lot of those digital camcorders didn't have what's known as a digital output, so that if you wanted to output the video and the sound from the machine onto something else to record it, it would still come out of a what's called an analog connector. So it would be something like an S-video connector would have been a high-quality analog at the time. So what you need to do is you need to examine the outputs, maybe if you've still got the manual, or you can still download most manuals, even for kit from the 1980s. Have a look at what the outputs are that carry the video and the sound signal, and then you will need to get what's called a video capture device, which is usually sits outside the computer, connects to your computer, say via USB would be a typical way, and it has the appropriate set of connectors. So let's say, just for argument's sake, it's an S-video connector, which is like the, it would have given you the same quality as SVHS. Yeah, if it's an S-video connector, then it comes out, this analog signal comes out of your camcorder into the box. That box turns it into digits that then are sent down the USB cable and can be recorded digitally onto the computer. And that's the best way to do it, because once you've got it in digital form, you can make backups of it, and those copies shouldn't degrade in the same way that a tape will degrade.
Yeah, so if it's sentimental material, that's important. Yeah. And that little gadget then, how much would typically one of those cost?
Typically you're looking around £100, but okay, you can do it for less. The other thing is, if it's just one tape and there's not going to be more of these, and particularly if the item is precious to you, you might consider using a service. You know, there are commercial companies that provide this service, and if there is a local company, you could just go take it in person and watch them do it and make sure that it doesn't get lost or damaged or anything like that, if it's very precious to you and if there's a limited number of tapes. But if it's more than a handful, it'll probably be cheaper in the long run to do it yourself using your box.
Or get together with friends and family and say, look, I've got a load of old tapes, have you got any? And then you've got one in for everyone to use. Yeah.
And then you could probably do it with all your VHS tapes as well, because it would probably have the appropriate inputs for that.
Leads us on to our next question, in fact, Fevzy, from G, who's in Kent. I've got a selection of video cassettes, some of them quite specialised, I won't ask any questions here, which I can no longer watch. So where could I get a new VCR and needs a good pause function for these, says G in Kent.
Okay, well, so interestingly enough, about 6 weeks ago, it was announced that they're stopping manufacturing VHS VCRs, and I'm assuming we're talking about VHS. If it's Betamax, it's going to be even harder, or even Philips had something called Video 2000 back in the day.
No, the only person who bought Betamax was my dad's brother, John. So he was the only one who bought it.
Yeah, you know what? I bought one.
Did you buy one?
Yeah, I bought one, and then the next day, and because it was technologically superior, and I'm a geek, and so I wanted
that's what he kept saying. Yeah,
well, it was, but technologically superior doesn't always win, unfortunately. And the next day, I took it back and bought a JVC because I realised that they weren't going to win the
battle,
the format war. You know, that went on for years. That format war, you know, it was stretched out over a very long time. So, you could still find a VHS video recorder, but I think, you know, eventually you're not going to be able to do that, and eventually that machine's going to die. And the reason why they stopped manufacturing, by the way, is because the manufacturers were finding it hard to get the parts to make them.
Yes.
And therefore, I think it's time to bite the bullet and transfer them into a digital format.
So get the previous gadget and do that.
Yeah, because although, yes, you can still go out and find it, you know, you can buy them online still, in, you know, well-known retailers online still have them. And there are still ones, by the way, if you want to buy another device, there are ones with a video recorder and a DVD and hard disk recorder built into it. And that's great if you've got a big collection. I think Panasonic do a range of those still. You can, you know, plug in the VHS video and then record it either onto a disc or onto the internal hard drive, and that's a great way of doing all the archiving yourself. Again, it becomes economic if you've got a large number of tapes that you need to do.
I find we've got one still. I can't remember where this was. I didn't pay for it. I got it either someone was binning it or somewhere was binning it, and but I find we use it so intermittently now that when you do put it on, that either the tape is destroyed or the video is playing, the player's playing up.
I mean, they were very complicated. They had these things called helical scan heads, so it wasn't just like a tape recorder where the tape would just go past a fixed head. This head was revolving on a sort of slight axis, a bit like, you know, a bit like the Earth, on an axis, revolving on its own axis whilst going around the sun. It was kind of quite intricate. And I have to say, though, the one I did buy back in 1981, which weighed 19 kilos, still works.
Oh, still works.
Built like a tank, and no one can steal it because it's just too heavy. in fact, it's probably a good weapon if anyone ever comes in the house. But you can still find them, but it is time just to go ahead and swap it, transfer it over to digital.
Well, look, we're nearly out of time, but before we've literally got 2 minutes before travel and weather. But is there any truth, or is it a myth, or is it fact or fiction? I should say, if swapping hands boosts the smartphone signal.
Yeah, this is a great story. Yes, it's true. There was a study that was done of various smartphones, and they were found that because the aerial's no longer internal or stick out like they used to from the phone, you know, like a finger, now they're these bands that you see across the back of your iPhone or what have you. And when you hold the phone in and you touch those bands, you reduce the signal. This was first noticed, or famously noticed, back in 2010 with the iPhone 4, when someone wrote to Steve Jobs and said, this is happening, and he said, well, don't hold it that way. And you know, even now it's an issue. So the advice is, where possible, use a hands-free set and not hold the handset. Don't hold the handset too tightly. And if you are holding it, try to avoid the antenna bands. You can normally see them. So that sometimes means it's better to hold it in the left or the right hand, depending on the design.
Okay.
And the guy who was looking into this said, and quite rightly, there should be an antenna rating on the box.
Yes.
So you should know how sensitive the antennas are, because although smartphones got a lot smarter, they don't make better phone calls. In fact, they're a bit worse, because it's a smartphone is now a digital Swiss Army knife, and it just happens to make phone calls, but not particularly well.
Well, what I will do, Fevzy, is I've got a Sony Xperia. I will take a couple of random calls and just see which hand the signal's clear in. Then, depending on who it is I'm chatting to, I'll swap hands. If it's someone I'm not that keen on, I'll put it in the bad hand. So sorry, I can't hear you, and disconnect the call. Can people find out more about you online?
They can at Gadget Detective on Twitter, or you can go to the website where there's a free tech advice forum, www.gadgetdetective.com.
You're a good man. It's lovely to have you with us. Thank you.
Cheers, Joe.
Bye-bye. Gadget Detective Fevzy on BBC Sussex and BBC Surrey, which serves a region that this afternoon has some good sunny spells.